Hey guys, this is Zach Roberts for Emerald City Video Podcast. Doing my seven favorite films. Most of the films that I'll say are kind of my solid. If you ask me, what's your favorite film? It's going to be one of these seven films. But there's a couple that are influenced by recent events or just, recently seen them for the 17th time and been like, that is my favorite film. The first one is 8.5, which I happen to have the Criterion version for some of these films, at least. And if you haven't seen this film, it's kind of like Citizen Kane. It's like you need to have seen this film to kind of consider yourself a film snob or aficionado or whatever. It's fantastic. I will often just put this film on in the background, even though it's in Italian, because the score is amazing, the acting is amazing, the dialogue is hilarious, even today. Many, many years on, I'm trying to remember when this film was made, which is bad. Was it 1963? Sorry, SUNY Purchase Film School. I don't remember it offhand. But if you ever get a chance to see this film in theaters, oh my God, go see it. It is worth any amount of money to see in theaters, because especially if it's a film cut. The film is amazing. I forget if there's a Blu-ray version out. The Criterion version from several years ago is really, really good. It's a film that's it just on every level, cinematography, everything is kind of the mandatory. And it started my love, my like just de facto love of films that end in dance sequences, as you can see right here. Basically, I have kind of a rule of thumb that if a film ends in dance sequences, I love the film. I'm trying to remember I think 40 Year Old Virgin. I was kind of like mixed. It's like kind of random comedy. Like, okay, this is amusing. And then it ended in an amazing dance sequence a la 8.5, which it has to be the influence. I don't know. I've never really looked into it, but it has to be the influence from 8.5. You have to see it. It's Fellini's best film. I'm sure that many people will argue with me what is his best film, but I don't care. 8.5. It's a film about being frustrated about not being able to make a film. It's every filmmaker's, like, if you don't like, obviously Citizen Kane, I don't even have it on my list of top seven because it's like so fucking obvious. But this film is about basically Fellini's own frustration of being out, having to make the next film and everything like that. I'm not going to get into details because I don't want to make this an hour long thing like certain other members of Emerald City Video Podcast people have. But I can't recommend this film enough. If you haven't seen it, sit down and watch it, and really watch it. Get a good glass of wine or something like that. It is a film that is meant to be thoroughly, at least the first time, thoroughly viewed. Most films nowadays, are meant to be kind of off to the side. Like, I've got a TV screen over here that I watch while I do work. I'm watching one of my other seven favorite films right now, actually. But this film, at least the first couple times, you need to really just fucking love it and really like spend time with it. it is fantastic. I think that's probably all I've said about this film, really, is that just it's unbelievable on every level. And it's one of the few films, and like, I'm a huge film snob. I have no problem watching black and white. I have no problem watching subtitles. It's become like I can watch it and read at the same time. It's become a thing that I can do over the years. But there's a lot of black and white films that, or subtitle films that are just impossible to watch, and that you really have to, like, Ozu is Japanese filmmaker, absolutely amazing. Oh my God. Like, if you're just You have to be kind of uber film snob or like a really big Japanese film person, not anime, but like Japanese film, to love his work. I worship his work. But wow, it is tough to watch. It is draining, and you kind of have to be like, I can't watch it. Like, I could put this film on and then put it on again, because it is actually genuinely fun. It is a master. I always screw up Marcello Mastroianni. I'm sure I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Anyway, I've done this the entire time. I've loved this film, but him right here. I don't know who the equivalent of in American cinema he'd be. Maybe a George Clooney, but like, George Clooney doesn't really have the, I don't think he has the, like, the long-term acting chops. Like, he's been in films that he's quite good in, but he's not always. But this guy is, like, everything. He's the Clark Gable, George Clooney, Brad Pitt, everything across the sun. I mean, like I wish that I could look this good in a suit. but anyway, before going on about this film, again, 8.5, number one, maybe not number one film of all time. Like, it's not like the enjoyable film, like, number one film snob, like, you got to see this film before I respect you as a film connoisseur. And if you don't like it, I don't know if we can be friends, sort of thing. This film, 8.5, by Fellini. So yeah. Anyway, my next one, dumbing down a little bit in no particular order, Fight Club, because Fight Club. It's the film. It came out in 1999, probably one of the greatest years in cinema of all time. Fight Club, American Beauty, Three Kings, and on and on and on. The Matrix, I believe. No, it was before 98. I always forget when The Matrix. But anyway, 1999. If you look up, like, go on IMDb and look up films that came out in 1999, you're gonna be like, holy crap! I wish I was 18 years old and about to go into film school when this year happened. But Fight Club, which for some reason, I do have my Blu-ray edition. I also have the somewhere around here, I have the original paper bag version of Fight Club that briefly was worth like $200 online before this came out, because Fight Club was massively underground popular sort of thing, and then the college crowd discovered it, and it became a movie poster thing, and kind of sort of ruined it for the kind of like, yo bro, like, you haven't watched Fight Club, sort of crowd. But I'm a huge Palahniuk fan of the book. I actually think that Fight Club is a better movie than it is book. You can fight me about that. I don't know. I think it's a better ending, is a better kind of like the dialogue. Palahniuk writes, like, all of his books are like basically screenplays. Fight Club, I think it's, the film opened up, obviously it's one of Fincher's best films, but, it really opened up, and it gave us Fincher, which is like freaking unbelievable. Like, the fact that it like elevated him up to that level, that everybody was like, okay, we'll give him money. He can go off and do his thing, whether it be House of Cards or whatever else. But Fight Club, you know, I think the political statements are still considerably apt. And it's kind of in a consumer-friendly version of maybe not socialism or anarchism or whatever the hell you want to call it. But I think it's one of those few films that unless it's somebody who has like a serious problem with the masculinity aspect of it, which always has questions, but I think that the film recognizes that enough. You know, I mean, there's a scene in when I'm trying to figure out how to not give spoilers, because I'm kind of obsessive about not giving spoilers, but you know, the two characters are on the bus, and it's like, is that what a man's supposed to look like? Which, you know, it's like really fun and pop culture referential, and it's hard. I find it really hard to have a conversation with somebody who don't at least respect this film. I had my film professor, which I'm really mentioning dropping that a lot. I usually don't do that much anymore. My film professor, SUNY Purchase, he didn't like the film, but and we actually, it's one of the few films that we disagreed on. Is my film history professor, and he's probably the guy that I respect more than anybody else on the planet about film. As like he introduced me to basically almost everything that's on this list right now, that's at least done in the last 20 years. This film, he said, he didn't like it that much, but it's perfect. And I kind of agree with that. Like, it's kind of amazing that the limited CG, you can, modern audiences will look at it and go, oh, that was a CG. That can shot, or that shot was thing. But like, you could write endless papers about this. You could write, you could discuss this film endlessly, and also you could put it on and get shit-faced drunk and enjoy it. I think it's one of the few films kind of in the history of cinema that you can do that. I mean, you can't sit down and watch, I mean, I don't know, I guess you could, but you can't sit down and watch Casablanca and like be like, yeah, go Rick. I don't know. It's not something that I would do, at least. I enjoy Casablanca. It's one of my top 30, 40 films, maybe. But Fight Club, if somebody says, hey, look, you want to put on Fight Club? I'd be like, yeah. You know, it's like, it's almost like it's like, which is not in my top seven here, but it's like Hudson Hawk. Except this is actually genuinely a good film. You can learn a lot about editing techniques. You can learn about camera moves. You can learn. Everyone in the film is really, really good acting. I don't know, Jared Leto's good. Brad Pitt's good. Brad Pitt's probably, I'm trying to think of a better performance for Brad Pitt. But like, to me, even though I've been familiar with Brad Pitt since like Thelma and Louise, True Romance. Don't be fucking condescending to me, man. I'll fucking kill you. Like, this to me is his defining performance. He'll be 30 years from now, he'll be 75 years old or however old he'll be. And I will be like, it's Tyler Durden. Like, there's no question about that. He'll always be this character, I think. In the same way that, again, like, in the same way Humphrey Bogart will be he's Rick from Casablanca. He may do Maltese Falcon. He'll do all these films. 80% of cinema people will say that he's Casablanca. So Fight Club. Forget if this has all the editions, but yeah, it looks like this has all the. You can get the Blu-ray version. There's a paper bag version, which if you Google online, it should actually do it. I highly recommend. You can get it for like $5 now on DVD or something like that. It's one of those, you know, Best Buy bin probably films. Invest in the, I think it's like probably $10. I don't know if the Blu-ray, I don't think the Blu-ray edition is really all that much better, worthwhile to get Blu-ray. If you can find the paper bag edition, the commentary tracks are probably the best commentary tracks, and the extras are probably the best extras of all time. There's commentary tracks on the DVD by David Fincher. It's fantastic. But the best one is with David Fincher, Brad Pitt, Ed Norton, and Helena Bonham Carter, who I think Helena Bonham Carter, she's clearly not in the room for it. But Brad Pitt and Fincher and Norton clearly are in the same room together talking. And the backstories about the film and the story about Rosie Donnell is worth it. If you're a cinema fan or a film fan or whatever, if you respect film, even if you don't like this film and you listen to the commentary, if you liked Rosie O'Donnell before, you'll fucking hate her. And again, watch the film, enjoy it, and then watch the extras and watch the commentary on that on the DVD. I can't recommend making sure that you get one with a commentary and a thing before. It's so freaking worth it. In fact, a lot of times when I watch the film, I'll watch it with a commentary anymore, which is not something I do. I can't think of a film in the last 8 years, 10 years actually now, that I've actually given a crap about the commentary. I'll buy the DVD that has a commentary, but I don't usually watch it unless it's, you know, Terry Gilliam or something like that, who, you know, is amazing at doing commentary because he talks about stuff. Which leads me to my next one, Brazil. Which again, the only, this is like $50, and I bought, because I gave out one of the three films to a friend to borrow, which is the important one, which is the Terry Gilliam edition. This is almost mandatory. Obviously, if you get a chance to watch it, just watch it. But you have to make sure that you watch the Terry Gilliam version, the non-studio version, first. The studio version is fantastic. I've seen it a million times, and at this point I barely notice, because I love both versions. I think that this is one of the very weird moments, very weird times that both the kind of like fucked up studio version and the director's, you know, I'm gonna burn the studio down version are both fantastic. But Terry Gilliam's version is if you're a Terry Gilliam fan, you know, from Monty Python, you gotta watch this one. You gotta watch his version, because it is obviously it's his vision. So to me, you should respect that. That's why you enjoy film, and that's why you enjoy cinema, and that's why you're buying the probably $50 or whatever Criterion version of this film. Which again, I can't recommend enough. This version is it's got three DVDs. One is Terry Gilliam's version of the film. One which. I'm trying to if they actually have a name of it. No, it's just as audio commentary of with Gilliam, which is kind of mandatory. Gilliam is if you've ever watched interviews with him, he's just so much fun. he loves film, which is the biggest, probably one of the biggest reasons why he's one of my top five favorite directors. Which I guess that's something we should, Russ. That's something we should do in a few other ones. Who's your favorite director? But he is. He loves cinema, he loves film, and he loves working in it. And he gets really, really pissed off when anyone tries to fuck with his work. And again, he's willing to burn anything. It's kind of like John Sayles, who literally does other work. He'll do like script rewrites and stuff like that so that he can do his own films without a studio to fuck with. You know, he did, I think it was, he did a rewrite on Crimson, Jan Sayles did a rewrite on Crimson Tide just so that he could fund, I think it was Matewan. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think those years add up, but, it was one of his films. And Terry Gilliam's very similar to that. He'll wait and wait and wait to do films, so that he can just do them right. Kind of ignore the Brothers Grimm. I feel like that was a cash film. I don't know. I like that film, but if you know Gilliam, it's like, something's missing here. Brazil is probably his ultimate Terry Gilliam film. It's got everything you possibly need. You got Robert De Niro in probably his weirdest film he ever does, ignoring the last 10 years of his life, which I feel like is a 2.0 that we kind of can ignore, because I like to think of Robert De Niro like 2003 beforehand, maybe. I don't know. That's not a particular year. But it is so good. But it also has a massive, the middle DVD here is a production notebook, which has got like the battle, a documentary about the Terry Gilliam's battle fighting for his right to release the film that he wants to do. It's got just people talking about the score, which once you watch the film, you will have it stuck in your head. And anytime anyone ever mentions the country Brazil, like this entire time that the Olympics have been going on in Rio, all I can think of is Brazil, and again, watch the film and you'll get it, and you'll be able to be completely batshit insane like me when it comes to the word or country name Brazil. And then the third disc on this fantastic Criterion edition, which is so worth its time and money, is the studio version, which is holy crap, I never knew it was 40 minutes less. It was a 94-minute cut by the studio called the Love Conquers All version, which is kind of a giveaway to an extent if you watch the film, but it's also great. I feel like sometimes you want to watch it and you're like, I want a non-Terry Gilliam depressing everyone dies at the end ending, and that's the version you can watch, because it's still got everything that Terry Gilliam filmed. It's still got the amazing acting by I'm blanking, Jonathan Pryce, who so freaking good in this film, and Catherine Helmand, and oh my god, Ian Holmes and Bob Hoskins and Michael Palin and Kim Greist. I mean, like, it's, I'm trying to think, maybe Fifth Element for Ian Holm, kind of, actually kind of almost the same role to an extent, like a character that he plays to some extent. And Bob Hoskins, and it's just, I everybody in this film is fantastic. And again, like the statements, I mean, like it's one of those films that you watch it and you're like, oh my God, now I get that reference. You can suddenly be Captain America in so many moments where you go, oh my God, that person that I know made that reference, you know, and you'll never look at ducks the same. Not quacks, but D-U-C-T-S. So yeah, I probably didn't say anything about this film because I really just can't recommend it enough, and that you should watch it kind of sight unseen. Because if I tried to explain it to you, I think that you would probably be less likely to watch it. But that's kind of the description of most Terry Gilliam films, other than maybe Fear and Loathing. Like, if you tried to describe, Dr. Parnassus, anyway, I don't think that you'd want to watch, I don't know if you'd want to watch it. But again, Brazil. Unlike the past couple films, I don't really have a good lead-in to the next one, which is... Now, one of these I'm not going to have just readily available, and I think it's going to be this film, which is kind of evaporated. Nope, here it is. Also, again, a Criterion version. It's kind of weird. Broadcast News. It's kind of the which again, it's like be on my longer list. It's the Smart Man's The Paper, which if you haven't seen The Paper, highly recommend it. I actually don't know, other than buying a cheap DVD on Amazon, how you can actually watch it. I don't think it's on Netflix. Broadcast News, next to The Network, it's probably the best film about kind of the death of media, the death of news. I actually think that this film, I'm sure... I'll have many people complain about it, but I think that this film is actually a better statement than The Network. Which, you haven't seen The Network, you gotta go see you gotta find a copy somewhere of The Network. It's probably on YouTube, but please pay for it, because that's what you should do if you love cinema. You should pay for films, because that's the only way those things continue to happen. Because people go, hey, holy crap, you know, somebody just, the DVD sales of The Network just went up $500,000. Maybe we should do a remake. I'm just kidding. Because that would be terrible. Unless they let me direct it, because that would be amazing. but Broadcast News, Albert Brooks' statement on basically the... this situation, like, of pretty people being on news, you know, it's this kind of weird, like, statement on, like, having, as opposed to having people who genuinely have news experience and know the news world and want and, like, are journalists reporting the news. It's the model where there's a time, whether it be 60s, 70s, 80s, depending on when you want to kind of set the date, that news media stop being a for the good of the people and turn into a profit network. This is it. And it's actually fun because it's like an Albert Brooks film, because it is, even though it's a James Brooks, James L. Brooks film. And it's got William Hurt, Albert Brooks, Holly Hunter. Holly Hunter probably in one of her best roles ever. She's so fantastic in this film. She's if you're I'm a journalist. That's what I do. She in this film is basically the love of my life. It's that she influenced every crush I've had probably since I was 16, because my aunt in her terribleness showed this film to me when I was probably a preteen, it's probably deeply affected my life more than it should have. It probably pushed me into journalism because I always wanted to be Albert Brooks in this film, which is, and once you watch the film, you'll get and go, why would anyone want to be the guy that sweated more than Nixon? it's the film's amazingly well done. It has an ending that you don't want, but you deserve, which I think is kind of the definition of most of my favorite films, whether it be Brazil, Fight Club, you know, 8.5, the rest of them, which I'll mention soon, as we're already at 26 minutes, which is the full length that I wanted to make this rant. It's a more enjoyable version of The Network. It's got a little bit of a not really a romantic comedy edge, but it's funny, and the best thing I like about this film is the characters react the way that those characters would. You see so many times in whether it be romantic comedies or whatever, you have smart people doing very stupid things or saying, being better than you expect them to be. And, you know, again, like William Hurt's character, is like that. But Albert Brooks' role in this film and acting in this, probably best he's ever done, best he ever will do, because it's just, it's an amazing script, amazing film. The way that he reacts in this film to heartbreak and kind of getting hit down at at his job is the way that it's a weird mix of the way that you'd hope that you'd react to that situation at the same time that you'd hope you wouldn't. Again, watch the film. And you can leave a comment and tell me if I'm wrong. But this is one of those films that find the VHS tape. Like, I don't care. I haven't gotten into the extras on this DVD, but I feel like it's one of those films that it's kind of hard to find. I don't know if it's available on at least any of the free streaming sites, but actually it's Criterion, so it might be on Amazon or Hulu, I think, now has Criterion, but I just can't recommend it enough. If you're a newsy oriented type person, this is kind of a mandatory companion to The Network, which, of course, if you haven't seen Network, what the fuck are you doing like watching this fucking butt thing? Like, go watch The Network, because it's mandatory. It's enjoyable, it's fun or whatever, but it's one of those films, and like Citizen Kane, like there's like 20 films in American society that you should goddamn well have watched if you're an adult and if you care about movies more than going to see, you know, the next I was gonna say Vin Diesel, but I fucking love Vin Diesel. Fuck you if you don't like Vin Diesel. There's nothing to love about, nothing not to love about him. But anyway, and fuck Kevin Hart. That's just seemed a related situation. But anyway, the next film is one that you almost certainly have not heard of. but it is probably the film that it's a film that when it came out on DVD, I bought three fucking copies of. It's Oh Lucky Man, Malcolm McDowell's one of his early breakout films. I don't know if it was even a breakout film, but one of his early films. Let's just say that. It has, I always blank on the director's film, even though he's one of my favorite directors. He directed If, which if you're a huge film snob, you've probably heard of. If, dot, 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 that all-important ellipses after it, which Malcolm McDowell was a also played, I'll get to it in a second, also played a, or he played a British school kid going to a, you know, private school, whatever, like they do. And you know, led a kind of uprising at the school. I'm not going to get into it. If you haven't seen the film, you kind of got to go see it. It's on that like top 100 list. Like, if you haven't seen this, what are you talking about? Like, not in that top 20, not like Citizen Kane, you know, Network, that sort of thing. Top 100 list. It's available. It's relatively easy to find. I don't know about streaming wise, but yeah. Oh, Lucky Man, on the other hand, like, there was a petition to get it re-released on VHS. And then once VHS became a non-entity, it became a petition to get it on DVD. Like, that's how esoteric this film is. But I actually own somewhere in my archives, I own the two VHS. That's how long this film is. Two VHS copy of this film. I also, you know, own a poster of it somewhere anyway, but it is, it's fantastic. If you watch, I recommend if you can do it, watching If, which also has a Criterion version, this version, unfortunately, Lucky Man doesn't, watch If, then watch Clockwork Orange, and then watch this, and you will actually watch one of the weirdest actor cinema arcs of all time. I can't think of anything else comparison. You watch Malcolm McDowell play a schoolboy who is becoming ultra violent, and then a young adult in Clockwork Orange being more ultra violent, and then you'll watch him at Clockwork Orange. I'm not giving really spoilers here, that he goes through the mental process where he becomes a good boy, and then you'll watch A Lucky Man, where he plays that character that he plays kind of sort of at the end of the film. It's this weird arc. And then there's another film by Lindsay Anderson, the director of this, and If, called Britannia Hospital, that he kind of plays the further character on it. And there's been at least a little bit written about how this is one of the weird, he played the same character throughout all these films. And the arc works. It's kind of weird. So I highly recommend that. But Oh Lucky Man, it is, if you ever read Voltaire's Candide in college, or just because you're a good person and Candide is kind of awesome. Like, what the hell are you doing not reading Candide? It's like the modern day Job. It's the reason, it's why I love it. Voltaire's awesome, and you should have read Candide, and you should go do that now, because you should be reading a book as opposed to like watching this now 33 minute long rant on YouTube or Facebook or wherever we end up putting this. I don't know. But Oh Lucky Man, Malcolm McDowell, he plays a young upstart, becomes a coffee salesman, gets sent to the northern parts of the UK, and goes through some of the worst things you could possibly imagine that a coffee salesman might ever go through, and he somehow, through most of it at least, stays a very, you know, upbeat person. And again, this film ends in the same way that 8 and a Half did, the dance party, which is again why I love it. That's actually it's kind of sort of a spoiler, I guess, but either way, it's got music by Alan Price, and he cuts in. He's actually in the film, Alan Price, from the band The Animals. Go search YouTube. Search. You're on YouTube already. Go search The Animals. You'll recognize their music immediately. It's probably one of the few original film scores with music, original music. That's not just score, but it's actual music, songs, and everything that I actually have on my phone. Like, it's one of the like 15 albums that I actually have downloaded onto my phone because it's really great. Because it's Alan Price and he's fucking awesome. But without telling you too much about this film, it's probably one of British cinema's best films. As a person who likes British cinema, actually much more so than French cinema, you'll notice that I don't have a single Godard film. I don't really like Godard. I don't really like French cinema that much. I don't even like Italian cinema that much, other than Eight and a Half and maybe one or two other Fellini films. But this is up there. This is probably one of the best British films of all time. And I think it really captures that that time period, right before, during. I always forget years. 1973, so before the kind of Thatcher-esque years, like before for America, be those Reagan-esque years where everything was really kind of terrible, but you know, for some reason everybody was pretending to be upbeat. But the economy was in shits and, you know, and whatever. But again, if you've ever worked a crappy job that you had to do like really bad stuff, this film you might get. It is long. I'll tell you that. I'm trying to see where the exact screen time is. I mean, it's enough to it's enough to have two VHS tapes for those who are old enough to remember VHS tapes. That's a long time. It's 178 minutes. It's vaguely noticeable. It's not a film that like hauls ass through it. It's worth it. It's almost 3 hours film. There's supposedly a version out there, at least I've been told, that is like 6 hours long, and I'm dying to see that version. Sadly, I'm not quite sure. I'm trying to remember last time I checked. I think Lindsay Anderson was still alive. I have to try to find him again. This film is fantastic. I'm not quite sure whether I would recommend drinks during it, because you might. It's, like I said, it's slow. If you like your political commentary, like, oh my God, like every single film that's on this list, which I just realized, I'm really hackneyed like that. But if you like your political commentary in the form of British cinema, I recommend this. So my next one is, I think it's the one film I don't have readily available here. It is Bob Roberts with Tim Robbins and Alan Arkin in one of his best all-time roles. I know that everybody will probably bite my head off, but I think he's better in this one than, even though he's only brief, I think he's probably 15 minutes in the film. Probably better than Harry Potter. Sorry, guys. He'll always be Bob Roberts' kind of weird campaign manager sort of thing than Snape. It's Bob Roberts' Tim Robbins directed and starring film. He plays a kind of a right-wing music, folk music star, running for United States Senate in Pennsylvania. He plays like very much so, and there's a lot of parody in there of Bob Dylan. And like I said, I definitely do a YouTube search for Bob Roberts music, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. He directly parodies a couple different, like, these times are changing. I believe that the track was These Times Are Changing Back. Tim Robbins actually made the songs are so good in the film that he actually made the decision to not release many of them as on a soundtrack because he didn't want them to be used by the right wing. Tim Robbins, you know, obviously crazy left winger, great guy. At least in my opinion, he's a great guy, does a lot of great films. His kind of a family thing, like I think his brother and his father are both relatively well-known folk musicians, at least within that kind of folk music circle. This film, it's a fake documentary. I never know where the line of mockumentary is really there. It led by kind of a BBC style on camera person who pops in and out. It's got a lot of really great side characters that talk about issues going on in the to kind of Reagan's America. Tim Robbins was deeply affected clearly by Ronald Reagan's America. Talk about Iran-Contra and kind of the lead up to the stock market. I think that this film, I'm kind of surprised and disappointed that this film hasn't really made, in this era with Donald Trump and everything like that, hasn't really made yet another comeback. It kind of made a little bit of a comeback during the 2000s, to the point that Tim Robbins actually appeared on stage as Bob Roberts at the end of the film, which again, you need to watch the film, I won't tell you, during a Ralph Nader rally in 2000. At Madison Square Garden. I was thankfully lucky enough to see it firsthand, me in the press pit, so it was like it's close to him. It was like super uber because no one in the audience got what he was doing because he was playing a role, and everyone's like, oh, it's Tim Robbins, this great lefty liberal, and then he comes on and sings these horrible right-wing sounding songs. It's fantastic. I don't think that there's any video of this, weirdly, because I've looked and I've yet to be able to find more of it, highly recommend the film. It has a pretty good DVD release, but I don't know if the extras are really worth a damn. I think there's some behind the scenes stuff that's probably fun once you've watched the film to watch it. I don't think it really adds anything else to the context of the film. But again, if you're kind of a lefty political person or you just like satire and kind of play, can't recommend it enough. Helen Hunt is in it in one of her earlier roles. John Cusack is briefly in it, and Jack Black in one of his first ever film roles is in the film. And also a buddy of mine, Matt Faber, plays his buddy or brother, I always forget. We've actually been trying to talk for years about doing a sequel to it, as I am Zach Roberts, and we always thought it would be cute to do a Bob Roberts' son or something. It's a really fun film, and I think that I don't know, I'm not 100% sure that if you're like a right winger or something, you'd enjoy it 100%, because I feel as though if you're that politically that way, I'm not quite sure if you can enjoy anything that Tim Robbins does that's political. Even if you're like apolitical, I think you can really enjoy this film as kind of a good basic satire of it. And also, again, the writing's really good, and you know, and I can't think of anyone that does kind of a bad acting job in it. It's one of probably the most solid mockumentary fake documentary films that I've ever seen. It genuinely, if you didn't go, oh my God, that's Tim Robbins and Alan Arkin. It really plays as a documentary, because a lot of the handheld camera usage and things like that. But okay, so finally, my last one is, it's on screen over here, so I don't have a DVD of it, because I think I only own it digitally right now. The Big Short. It's the only film on this list that I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that has been made in the last 16 years, right? Yeah, Fight Club was made in 99. So 17 years. So Big Short, if you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix right now. Go freaking watch it. Don't have much of an excuse. Go rent it, because they've actually had a bunch of sales on like Google Play and stuff like that for it. But it's about the financial crisis in 2009, when everyone was shorting the housing crisis and the foreclosure crisis, really, and how kind of everybody set that up to fail and then collapse. And it's actually one of the few films that has a lot of cameos from different stars, like Margot Robbie, and who they take these brief moments and kind of explain things like like technical financial terms. And I think it's great, because you have an excuse to watch a film that has all these big Hollywood stars, Brad Pitt, blanking on other people, because Selena Gomez is right there on the screen. You can't see her because I can't twist this computer screen around, and it'll probably give some weird effect. But it moves really quick, has quick editing. It kind of gives you reminders throughout the entire film of why, of what was going on. The iPhone was released there, and then so it's this really good. They do this really amazing thing of kind of reminding people who were at least conscious during those age. I suppose maybe a 15-year-old wouldn't necessarily get these like references today, but as a 35-year-old, I'm like, oh yeah, the iPhone was released the same time as this was going on. That makes sense. And it makes some statements about consumerism a little bit, but it's not like Fight Club heavy-handed. It's not like they're asking you to like take your shirt off and fight in a basement somewhere. But it's about people still making money off of the horrible situations of other people. And at least it's one of the few films, unlike The Wolf of Wall Street, that takes a moment and stops and goes, you shouldn't be celebrating that you've just made all this money off of human misery. I mean, there's a great scene of just a couple minutes ago where I paused the film and decided to start doing this, where Brad Pitt goes, I'm paraphrasing here, but stop celebrating. Do you know that every time 1% that the unemployment rate goes up, 40,000 people die? That's a true stat. And this is one of the great things about this film, is that almost everything in the film is at least on the basis of true, at least the level that you can expect in documentary film is true. The few times that they're like, oh, it's really a great film. That's, as a person who loves films about things that happened, that actually happened, whether they be historical or modern current affairs films. I like that this film stops and goes, well, I don't have friends like that. I got friends in the fashion industry. I would never hang out with these people. I like that sort of stuff, because it's joking with the nonfiction fiction narrative thing, putting it on its head. But this is also like it won won a bunch of awards for damn well good reason. The editing is really great. The acting is really great. Even though it's Brad Pitt and Carell and a couple other people, no one has like a big nose or bad hair or anything like that. Brad Pitt, you look at him, it's Brad Pitt with an ugly pair of glasses. It's not that amazing, that everybody's there, but you really do step out of the moment, because they are playing actual human beings that bet on the financial crisis and made boatloads of freaking money. You kind of understand where they're coming from and you care about them. And that's something that, I don't know, I find relatively rare. That it's one of the big reasons why I genuinely despised Wolf of Wall Street, is that they celebrated his character, Leo DiCaprio's character, throughout the entire film, and then he got like a couple, he got, he's in a tennis, playing tennis in prison, and like no one ever earned anything. And it's not like, we'll see, nothing ever happened from this crisis or whatever, and no one ever learned any lessons. It's just like, see, you can do all this stuff and then this is all you get. And there was no like bad boy, at least even a moment of like, you shouldn't have done that. This film, basically everyone is ashamed of making money off of this situation, And one of the reasons that they're doing it, like a lot of the reasons that almost all of them talk about doing it, is because, well, if somebody's going to make money off it, we might as well make money off of it. And we want to take the big banks for all they're worth and sort of thing. And, but again, I think that one of the number one reasons why you should watch this film is that you learn a lot about kind of the terms that you might, if you watch CNBC, if you turn that on for a moment, if you accidentally hit the button past, you know, Bravo or something, and you hear, you know, different financial disclosure terms and stuff like that, you might actually understand a couple things and go, oh my God, they're screwing us and they're broadcasting it right on television. What do we do? And you go, you don't really do anything because, yeah. But again, enjoyable film beyond the kind of political and financial implications behind it and everything like that. I think you can watch this film and enjoy it. I think my mom watched it, and she really, really hates anything other than kind of like lighthearted fare. And she was like, oh my God, this was enjoyable, yet I'm completely freaked out about the financial system. So yeah, highly recommend it. It's on Netflix right now. You can get it streaming otherwise. You can also buy a DVD of it or whatever you want to do. But you really don't have much of an excuse. I mean, if you don't have a Netflix account, or if you're not signed into somebody else's Netflix account, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? Like, everybody in America has a Netflix account. And you should, because it's cheap and you got access to, like, I don't know how many films at this point. You know, 4% of them are good films, but you can watch The Family Guy, like, for the 47th time. Yeah. So, The Big Short. Again, round up, 8.5. Fight Club, Broadcast News, Brazil, Oh Lucky Man, Bob Roberts, and the only one made in this millennium, The Big Short. At least as of August 22nd, the time that I am filming this at 4 o'clock in the morning, with a good glass of wine from Layer Cake Wineries. These are my hashtag fave